It's time for Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We have some fun conversation ahead of us. Good conversation as we continue talking about exemplary Lutheran schools this week. What makes our Lutheran schools so great, and what can our schools learn from one another as they implement best practices in their schools that that can be shared with other schools as well? How do they go about implementing those best practices? We have been spending some time talking with the five exemplary Lutheran schools from across our church body, we have one more school to talk with today. We'll talk with our friends at Divine Redeemer in Heartland, Wisconsin in just a moment. Thanks to our supporter, our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Worldwide KFUO, especially Faith and Family. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website. Go to KFUO.org and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. And there you can find more information. Click on that. That'll take you to more information about Concordia University, Wisconsin. Joining me by phone this morning, Mr. Mike Oldenburg. He is the principal at Divine Redeemer Lutheran School in Heartland, Wisconsin. Good morning, Mr. Oldenburg.
Good morning.
Great to have you as our guest this morning, and thanks for taking some time out of your schedule there. I know you're in the classroom quite a bit there at Divine Redeemer, and so I appreciate your time this morning sharing with us about your school. Let's talk a little bit about the history of Divine Redeemer in Heartland, Wisconsin.
Well, the church started in 1976. And they started a school in 1980 with just a preschool, and then it grew from there. They added one grade at a time till they had up through eighth grade. When I came here in 1997, they were four-year-old preschool through eighth grade. The fifth and sixth grade was combined in one class, and the seventh and eighth grade was combined in one class. At that time, they did not have a gymnasium, and they had just completed that building project, a cafeteria, a gymnasium, and several classrooms. And I think that's, along with the growth of our church at that time, which was growing pretty steadily, that helped our school grow. When I came here in 1997, there were 170 students, and then the school and church both started growing rapidly. And we ended up in 2001 doing a building addition to be able to double all of our classes, so to have two classes at each grade level. And we currently have 340 students.
Wow. Well, share with us, our listeners who might not be familiar with the geography of Wisconsin, where would we find Heartland, Wisconsin?
Well, you just want to go 30 minutes directly west of Milwaukee.
Aha, very good. So just outside of Milwaukee, we have Heartland, Wisconsin, where we'll find Divine Redeemer Lutheran Church and School. And now you serve, you mentioned, you started with just one grade and worked your way up. Now is it preschool through eighth grade, is that right?
We've actually added three-year-old preschool, and we have two-year-old preschool. We're the Eagles at Divine Redeemer, and our two-year-old program are our Eaglets.
And a great place for them to grow, I'm sure. What it makes Divine Redeemer Lutheran School unique? I'm sure in Wisconsin there are probably a number of Lutheran schools and education options there. What makes Divine Redeemer unique?
Well, I think that the thing that my wife and I immediately noticed when we were given the call to come to Divine Redeemer and we came here and visited was the joy-filled atmosphere. And we hear that over and over again from people who come to visit our school. There's just a joy-filled atmosphere here. It's very positive, it's very upbeat, and it's a great environment. And that's a common theme that we hear. And I think that's what the exemplary school team that came in to assess our school, I think that was one of the big things that they noticed and felt was a best practice here was the climate of our school.
Mm-hmm. And what contributes to that? What makes that climate what it is?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that contribute to that. I think one of the biggest things is that all of our teachers have been trained in what's called love and logic. I'm sure many people have heard of that. After a couple years of being here, I had a parent bring me the Love and Logic book and ask me to read it, and it was pretty thick, so I wasn't too excited about that. But I read it, and I thought, you know what? It's not written from a Christian perspective, but you can read between the lines, and I believe that the writers, I'm guessing, and think they are Christian, and I think it's exactly what our schools should be. And I went back to that parent and said, I'm excited about this. Thank you. And they said, we will pay for your staff to be trained. And so all our staff were trained back then. And since that time, I've become a trainer so that I can train our new faculty members that come on board. And I think that is one of the great contributors to the environment here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interactions that our teachers have with the students and the parents, we pride ourselves and work very hard to build positive relationships. I think communication is a huge part of that, being able to see the parents and talk with them often and send them information. I stand in the lobby every morning and greet all the students and parents, although the older I get, the harder it is to remember all their names. But I just want them to know that I'm not the big scary principal, that I love them, and we're here to support them, and also for the parents that I'm there. If they've got a concern, they can easily talk to me about it.
Let's go back to one of the things that makes Divine Redeemer unique, and that is the love and logic approach. I'm a fan of love and logic. We try to implement it in our household. I had a chance to attend the educator and parent retreat this summer. Great experience. What is the philosophy of love and logic that is so helpful in the classroom or on the ball field, on the court? What is the philosophy of love and logic that's so helpful to educators?
Well, it's not punitive in nature. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I served as somewhat of an assistant principal at a former school and dealt with a lot of discipline problems, I wish I was not a love and logic teacher, and I wish I would have had it back then, because the whole point is to build up positive relationships. And we know that kids are going to make mistakes, and we want to help them through it, and yet we want to let them know that we still love them. So we don't get mad at them, and because when you get mad at them, it then takes the issue away from what really was the problem and being able to correct it. And now it's an issue of I'm mad at you, you're mad at me, and we forget about trying to help the student correct the problem. So empathy is a key word mm-hmm. in love and logic. You feel sorry. I'm so sorry you did that. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't consequences at times. Obviously, when there's problems, there have to be consequences also. But we administer those with love, and then we want to help them to solve the problems on their own. So oftentimes it's like, I'm sorry you did that. What are you going to do to fix it? And oftentimes they don't know, and then you'll help them through and offer some suggestions on, well, here's what some other students have done in this situation. How do you think that's going to work out for you?
How do you think this approach prepares children for the future?
Well, I think it helps them to learn to be problem solvers, because it forces them to, we want to get them into the thinking mode and force them to think through how they're going to fix a problem and resolve it on their own rather than somebody else doing it for them. So I really think we're growing problem solvers as we use this approach.
Mm-hmm. And so now you have a school full of problem solvers.
It doesn't always work that way,
sure.
But that's the goal.
Right, right. That's what we're aiming for.
Right.
Well, let's talk about that. Part of this, the process of identifying exemplary Lutheran schools is the accreditation process. That's where it begins. As you go through that accreditation process, identifying some things that are unique about these schools, and that is mainly your process or your innovative approach to implementing replicable best practices.
Right.
What are those best practices at Divine Redeemer that you think other schools could use as well that can be replicated at other schools?
Well, I think the team kind of focused in on two,
mm-hmm.
and certainly one was our climate, and that's a little more difficult to replicate
mm-hmm.
Because of circumstances and makeup of the student body and those types of things. But some of the things we do that are climate-related, I think, could be used by other schools. The other thing they focused on, and I categorize all of these under relationship building, but we have a program here called SOAR. It's students organized around relationships. And it's really one of the emphases at our school is to build Christian leaders. And in our 7th and 8th grade, we have our teachers identify students that we think have the best leadership potential. And we try to match up one 7th grader with an 8th grader as a team of leaders. And then, and we have, I believe, 8 of those teams. So 16 leaders. It depends upon how many we identify, but that's what came out last year. And we put a 7th grader and 8th grader together as leaders. And then the rest of the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are divvied up into those 8 teams. And they have about 13 students, so 2 leaders and then maybe 13 students. And every other week I meet with those leaders, and we give them an icebreaker, and we give them a little Christian lesson to teach. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, Friday morning, during their Bible study period, they actually lead the lesson and the icebreaker. So it actually accomplishes 2 things. We're building relationships. We do that through the icebreakers because this is the middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then we're giving students that have leadership potential the opportunity to do that. So we call those our SOAR groups.
What does a typical day look like for students at Divine Redeemer?
Well, the first period is Bible study, and I'm going to focus more on the middle school. The second period is our math period, because we have 7 different math classes, and we place the students in the class that we think is most appropriate for them. So we mix up students, at least in the middle school level, for math classes. And in the other classes, last year we actually took our math program and we lowered it a grade level. So for instance, the 4th grade math now is the 3rd grade math. The 3rd grade math is now the 2nd grade math. So we kind of accelerated our kids in the math program. So that second period is math. And then they have a different teacher for social studies, for science, for English, and for literature. And then throughout the week, they have what are called specials. We have a full-time PE teacher, and then we have part-time people that do art, computer, Spanish, music, and they have to take, in the middle school, they have to take 1 musical option, and they can choose from either choir, spirit singers, which is kind of an advanced singing group, band, drumline, or handbells.
So a number of options for students throughout the day that really all comes together. It seems like it's all woven together in a in a Christian environment that's encouraging, that equips them to be faithful and contributing in some way as in their vocations.
That's why we exist. Mm-hmm. Because of the area we're in somewhat of an affluent area, and the people are well-educated, they're very successful, and they certainly want their children to be well-educated. But first and foremost, we are here to provide a Christian education. And then we also emphasize the fact that we provide a high-quality academic education, and then our next emphasis is on fine arts, and then sports. And I put sports last. I love sports. I hate to lose, but you don't have to push sports. Society pushes sports. All mm-hmm. kids, most kids want to play sports. What we find out is that you have to push the fine arts, because we find that there are so many students who have great talent in that area and they don't know it. And so we want to help them to develop that.
Sure. I like how your mission statement begins. I came across your mission statement recently. The mission of Divine Redeemer Lutheran School in partnership with parents.
We emphasize that very strongly. We believe we are being entrusted with parents' most precious gift from God, and it is a partnership, and we want to work together. It is not an adversarial relationship. It is a partnership, and we look at it that way, and we don't ever want to do anything to put a divide between us and parents. We want to work together, and the more the parents are involved in their child's education, I think the better it is.
Why is that important, and how is that different than a number of other philosophies regarding education of children in our country today?
Well, I think research shows that the parents who are involved in their children's education, actually the children do better. I think it shows the children that the parents believe that this is important and that they are concerned about it and they want to be a part of it. And when they see teachers and parents partnering together, they realize this is an important thing.
Are there stories from... Well, can you share with us some stories from maybe a student or a parent or a teacher that really exemplifies what the Divine Redeemer Lutheran School is about?
There's one, and it's the most dramatic story, so it's one that I do use regularly. We had some parents that brought their daughter to us in seventh grade. They actually showed up on what we call preparation day, which was on a Thursday, and school was going to start Monday. And they came in that Thursday, wanted to enroll their daughter, and they had not told her that they were going to do this. She was in a different school. She was having some struggles, being involved in some things that the parents were not happy about, and so they felt they needed to get her out of that school and enroll her in a Christian school. They had not told her they were going to do that, so she was not a happy camper about it. But they enrolled her, and I was so busy that day, I usually meet with the parents and spend time with them, and I did not have a chance to do that. They kind of snuck in and took care of business, and all of a sudden we have a new student. And obviously this young lady did not want to be here, and she let everybody know it, and she was a little bit disruptive. And I, the first week of school, had to call her in and say, you know, how can I help you? And she said, you can kick me out of this school. And she used some very colorful language. And I said, well, I'm not going to do that because your parents would like you here, and I'd like you to be here, and I'll do anything I can to help you, but I'm not going to kick you out of this school. Long story short, and there were some troubles in the family. There was a stepmom, and this young lady did not get along with her stepmom. I even had to remove one of them from my office to have a civil conversation because the two of them couldn't be in the same room together. Long story short, that family's, through the workings of the Holy Spirit, through our teachers and our student body, that family's life, they will tell you, what has been completely changed. And this young lady not only finished out 7th grade and 8th grade, she went on to Lutheran High School. She's now at Concordia University, Wisconsin, studying. The family became members of the church. They were unchurched before. Mom even helps out with our Sunday school, and their other children are in our school now.
What a blessing to see how... what a change that made for that young lady.
It's the most dramatic one that for us that we've ever seen. And obviously, you know, through the Holy Spirit, our teachers are touching the lives of young people each and every day. And they're not as dramatic as this story, but that's just one of the most dramatic we've had.
Certainly. What do you enjoy most about your work there as principal, Mr. Oldenburg?
I love the kids. I'd rather be out there getting the kids riled up and playing with them than being at my desk doing the paperwork. And if you saw my desk, you'd see that that's the case. I just love the kids, and I'm tall, and I'm big, and I don't want anybody to look at me as the scary principal, so I spend a lot of time with the kids, and I love it when the little ones come up and hug me, and the older ones give me high fives, and I just want to know, them to know I love them, and as all the teachers do, and we're here to do what we can to help them to grow as young Christians.
What led you to consider this vocation as an educator? Let's talk. I know we kind of skipped that at the beginning, but what led you up to this vocation as principal now, but as an educator overall?
Well, when I was young, I had some pretty powerful influences in my life. Dr. Carl Barth was my pastor growing up. He went on to become district president and president of Concordia Seminary. Dr. H. James Bolt was my principal. So I had some pretty powerful influence and some great teachers. And I, when I was young, thought I was going to be a pastor, but God knew better and steered me in a different direction. to become an educator. And then back in the early 90s, my principal came to me and said, I think that you should think about being a principal. And I said, I don't want to do what you do. I see what you do, and I don't like it. But he sent me to, at that time, they had what were called principals academies, and he sent me to one. It was a week-long experience. And after that, I thought, well, I guess I can give this a shot. And I went on to obtain a master's degree in administration and then received the call here to Divine Redeemer. This is my first principalship, and I've been here. This is my 19th year.
And thanks be to God for that. How have you seen things change and grow over that time at Divine Redeemer?
Oh, so much has changed. You know, our school has, over doubled in size. We've added many programs. When I first came here, there were no computers. Technology has been a huge growth for us. There was no foreign language. Our church has grown dramatically since I've been here. So God has really blessed Divine Redeemer. Even in the midst of when there's been some difficult situations, we know God's always had a plan for us. And that, you know, we can rejoice in that and not worry about falling apart when, you know, the trials come our way.
How can we learn more about the services, the work of Divine Redeemer Lutheran School and opportunities to for sending children to be students to partnering with the school as a family?
You can always go to our website. It's www.drlc.org. And then also there are articles that will be coming out about exemplary schools, and then we'll be doing a webinar about our best practices in March.
Very good, very good. drlc.org is the website.
Yep.
Any events coming up in the near future?
We have Grandparents Day on October 16th, along with our third and fourth musical. Grandparents Day is just one of my favorite days of the year. I guess I'm close in age to the grandparents, so I love them, and it's just a fun day, and we have a lot of fun with them. So that's one of my favorite days of the year, so we're looking forward to that. And the week before, we actually have a pastor who I taught with at a previous school who came here at the same time I did to be a teacher and then later went to become a pastor and is now a pastor here at Divine Redeemer. But the week before is his 25th year in the ministry celebration, so we're definitely looking forward to that.
Outstanding. Well, it's been just a joy and a pleasure to learn more about Divine Redeemer Lutheran School, Church and School in Heartland, Wisconsin. Thanks so much for taking time to share with us. I know that you probably have plenty to get back to there at school today. So thanks, Mr. Oldenburg, for spending time talking with us today.
My pleasure. God's blessing.
Thank you. God bless you and all the saints there at Divine Redeemer Lutheran Church and School in Heartland, Wisconsin. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk about we're going to revisit a conversation about fathers, dads of great students, how they can be involved in their local school as well. It's called Watchdogs. We're going to revisit that conversation with Eric Snow in just a little bit. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
I'm president of the International Right to Life Federation and was informed by my colleague in London of a huge victory. Pro-lifers there overwhelmingly defeated an attempt in Parliament to legalize assisted suicide. Considering people in Europe are more liberal, this is really good news from Great Britain. The Society for the Protection of Unborn Children was at the forefront of the battle. Paul Tully on staff said this debate highlights the need for advancements in palliative care, including the effective management of pain, which would diminish the calls for medical killing. Dr. Philippa Whitford, a member of Parliament, said it best. I have never considered as a doctor that death was a good treatment for anything. And another lesson learned is they must remain ever vigilant.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
In Luke 14, Jesus is invited to eat at a Pharisee's house. Why is Jesus concerned about who sits where? Live Tuesday on Issues Etc. We'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the historic one-year lectionary, talking with Pastor David Peterson about the parable of the wedding feast.
Issues Etc. Live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Hi, this is Dave Schmidt inviting you and your golf buddies to participate in Christian Friends of New America's third annual golf tournament, Tuesday, October 13th at Norwood Hills Country Club. Funds raised help CFNA welcome refugees and new Americans in the name of Jesus Christ, as CFNA helps them establish a new life through Bible studies, tutoring, health screenings, citizenship, and ESL classes. It also provides scholarships so they can attend LCMS schools. Please join us. More information at cfna-stl.org/golf.
Reverend Dr. Matthew C. Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod recently said these words regarding the importance of the work of Concordia Historical Institute.
When you forget your past, you forget the gospel. You become locked into your own little part of time. As you study the past and know the past and know what happened in the past, you see God at work. And you see Christ.
Discover your Lutheran history at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Joining me for this segment, Eric Snow. He's the executive director for Watchdogs. D-O-G-S stands for Dads of Great Students. Eric, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. I've been enjoying the show. Glad to be a part of it.
Well, thanks. It's great to have another program for dads and all about how dads are an important part of children's lives, and excited to share with our listeners what Watchdogs is doing. Eric, share with us about the history of Watchdogs, how it all started. What is Watchdogs?
Right. Well, the DOGS, Dads of Great Students, really says it all right there, but you know, we started in a very different way than what the program has grown into. Back in 1998, 17 years ago this month, as a matter of fact, in March of 1998, there was a school shooting in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And for the listeners that don't remember, I'll just give a brief reminder. This is the one that the young boys, I believe, in middle school had set some guns out in the field across from the school. One of them went inside, pulled the fire alarm. When the students and the teachers ran outside, they opened fire, killing four students and a teacher. And, you know, we were across the state in northwest Arkansas, in Springdale, Arkansas specifically. And at that time, way back in 1998, my kids were in kindergarten and third grade in a wonderful school. And another father called me, a guy by the name of Jim Moore. Jim and I were coaching our third grade sons in baseball at the time. And we were just in our respective homes watching television as every single news station in the country broadcast from Jonesboro. And we just couldn't believe what had taken place. Now, this wasn't the first school shooting, and unfortunately it wasn't the last, but this was pre-Columbine, and nothing like this had ever happened in our little state of Arkansas. And Jim just said something that really sort of spoke the truth into this, I think. He just said, you know, where are the fathers in this? You know, what could go on in these boys' lives that would make them even think of something so diabolical? And what sort of cathartic experience were they trying to create? What sort of pain were they trying to get rid of? And then you just think about the loss of life, and could we have done something, and could we have had a role there? And we very quickly brought that back to our school, and Jim said, I just feel like I want to be at school tomorrow. You know, we knew then, Andy, what we know now, and I hope the listeners believe this. School statistically is the safest place for our kids to be, and I want the educators out there to know that we know they do a great job keeping our kids safe. But when something like this happens, you know, we just want to move toward the school and sort of have a healing effect and just be there. Well, we approached our principal about creating a program to get men in the hallways, in the classrooms, just to be volunteers. A lot of the moms were well represented, and our principal got that vision and expounded on that, really, and drew the superintendent in on it, and that was an easy sell. Dr. Rollins is the superintendent in Northwest Arkansas, and he was a big advocate of it, and we created a program called Watchdogs. It was initially Dads of George students. We were doing it for one school, our school, George Elementary. But when it became successful rather quickly with getting the fathers and father figures in the hallways and classrooms, other schools pretty soon were calling our principal saying, okay, what's a watchdog and how do we get one? So from there, we've grown from a single school in 1998 to over 4,600 schools nationwide. We're in 46 states. And this school year alone, we'll have over 400,000 men that will take a full day off of work, come into their child's school, and spend that day volunteering all day long.
That is that's great to hear so many dads spending time in their kids' schools. And there are numerous reasons that this is a good thing. Let's talk about some of those reasons. Obviously, as you pointed out, this is something that started out of in response to a rather horrific situation and dads just wanting to be involved in their kids' schools. What happens when dads become engaged in a day of school at their children's schools?
Right. So when we started this, you know, I mean, we really didn't have a large nationwide view of really what schools wanted. You know, we didn't really understand the desire of the educators to increase parental involvement. We were really sort of blissfully ignorant of all of that. We were just sort of thinking of our own school and thought this would be a great thing. And then as we started working with some of the experts, the Department of Education, Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Justice, National PTA, other organizations like IFI, or NFI, excuse me, there is an IFI also, but the call you just had, we started working with these folks and we realized there's been numerous studies that have been done, and you all have covered a lot of that on what happens whenever a child has a positive adult male role model actually engaged in their lives. And whenever these men started coming into the school, we started really seeing those things actualized, meaning we started hearing from the educators that, you know, behavioral issues were improving, that in fact when you dropped a man in the classroom or in the lunchroom or on the playground or in front of the school in the morning, the discipline problems practically disappeared while he was there. And not necessarily because he's a deterrent, I mean, that certainly, but mainly because he's just setting the stage for a very different educational environment. And, you know, when there's a man around, the kids behave a little better. They set up a little straighter. They're a little more attentive, and basically they're trying to get his approval. And that's what we encourage these men to do, to come in and be those heroes of the hallways, to send a very clear message by just their very presence that education is important. And we really just sort of bounce off all that research that says having an engaged, you know, positive adult male role model is going to have a positive outcome. And we say, okay, then fine. If we could bring these men into the schools where the kids spend most of their time, do you think that would be a good thing? And the resounding answer from the schools and the parents is, yes, it is.
And so what we see are, as you pointed out, positive male role models that that are there making a difference in the lives of kids. Not that there aren't already some positive male role models, but sure, more positive male role models. You're right, especially in a lot of our grade schools, there tend to be not nearly as many male role models, perhaps more today than there were 20, 30 years ago. But certainly the more positive male role models we have, I think the better.
Well, Andy, exactly. And I'll tell you this, you know, I'll use my own family as an example. Of course, my kids now, those kids that were in kindergarten and third grade, are grown. My son is a doctor of physical therapy practicing in Lawrence, Kansas, and my daughter is in dental school at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska, so they're grown. And they would tell you that in the 33 years that I've been married to their mother and all their whole life, I've been in their life. But they also have benefited from having the positive male role models in their life, coaches, teachers, uncles that they've got, their grandfathers. You know, we telegraph everything that we do. I mean, in every one of our actions, we telegraph very clearly to our kids that we're busy. We don't necessarily say we're busy, leave us alone, but they watch us. They watch us get up in the morning. They watch us get ready for work. They watch us come home late. They watch us work on weekends around the house and at home. And so they watch what we do. They know that we're busy. When a guy takes a day off of work and comes into school and spends that entire day working with the educators, very important, working with the educators, it sends a clear message to the kids through our actions that, number one, we place a high value on your education. Number two, we place a high value on these teachers, and we respect them and the job that they're doing. That's also very important. And number three, we send a clear message to these kids that, you know, really a part of every responsible person's life is volunteerism, and to be able to take your time and to give that to someone else, even when you may not have your life completely lined out and you may not have everything that you need and you may be as busy as more than you can get done, to set that time aside to do something for somebody else, that's a powerful message to these kids.
We talked a little bit about how behavior changed when dad started showing up at school. How does having a dad at school or a couple of dads at school each day, how does that impact things like the student interaction and bullying?
Well, we've studied a lot of, first of all, let me say this, in all the schools that we have dealt with in the last several years, and just me personally, since I've been in this role as the director for the last 7 years since 2008, we've worked with a lot of schools, and almost every school that we come in contact with now has some sort of anti-bullying program, and that may not be called that, but that's what they're doing. They're focusing on, the way you respond to each other, the way you treat one another. And every one of those programs that they have in common, one of the things they have in common is modeling that behavior. They will tell the parents and they will tell the teachers, if we're going to send this message to the kids, we have to model that behavior. Well, what a better way to do that than see these men come in and into the school. And I will say this, primarily our program, the target is pre-K through about the eighth grade, okay? So we want a message to these men early and let them know they have a role in their child's education and get them introduced to those educators. But, you know, every one of these roles, it seems like for these little kids to be able to see these men come in and play the role of being, you know, respectful to the teachers, placing the value on education, it really does focus the kids. And we hear from the educators, you know, the way these kids act when the guy comes in is just, it's different. You know, they're trying to get his attention, trying to get his approval. And that's whether or not they have, you know, a great father already involved in their life. There's just something about us coming in these kids respond to. So, you know, the educators are the ones that are telling us that they like having these men in there. It gives the men, the educators, a chance to message to the men also about the great job they're doing at school and the role that the men can have in that to help them, you know, do the best they can in giving their child a good education and preparing them for the next steps.
What have some of the dads gained by participating in Watch Dogs?
I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that we hear fairly often are the men that, you know, have the children that are in maybe the third or fourth grade, and they said, yep, you know, the child comes home and sits down at the dinner table, and, you know, they want to strike up a conversation, and they'll say, well, how was school today? And the answer is, fine. What did you do today? Nothing. What did you learn today? I don't know. And what we hear pretty regularly are whenever the dad is up there, dad, stepdad, granddad, whoever this man, whatever his role is as it relates to that child, it opens up so many other points of contact because now he can ask more in-depth questions, and the child knows that he's been there. He knows the teachers. You know, he knows the water fountain in the back hallway that if you bend over and don't, you know, be careful, it'll squirt you in the face when you turn the thing. Because, you know, little things like that, you know, they know how wonderful the tater tots are at the lunchroom and why that's a good day to not take your lunch. It just opens up so many other things, and it seems like those simple things that you strike up a conversation with the child, all of a sudden you're not just talking about what you want to talk about, but you're talking about what the child wants to talk about. You're talking about what they, what's important to them and what's on their mind. And it really does. All these other things come out with that once you get that dialogue going. So we hear from these guys that, you know, first of all, what it changes for them is that, you know, they have these other points of contact. Secondly, it really opens their eyes to the important role that they have in their child's education. Most men I speak with don't understand that they have a tremendous impact on their child's education. Maybe a guy didn't get all the education he wanted. Maybe he wasn't the best student when he was in school. And maybe he thinks that he doesn't have anything to offer his child. But just by encouraging that child to read to him, just by asking that child if he got his homework done, her homework done, just by encouraging them and being a part of that and being, you know, in contact with the teacher, it goes miles to that child's success in education. So all these things we hear from the guys. And then I guess the third thing would be the respect that they have for the educators, because most of us, once we get out of school, even when we have kids, we don't go back into that environment. You know, even if we went all the way through college, you know, we get out when we're 22. Well, 10 years later, we haven't been in school in 10 years. And for them to go back in and to see what these educators do, it really gives them a chance to have an adult perspective and look at that through new eyes and really have the appreciation for these educators that they deserve.
What are some of the responses you received from educators regarding dads getting out and being part of a school day?
You know, at first, I just came back from the National School Board Association conference in Nashville, and I do about 35 or 40 educational conferences a year where we go and do workshops. That's how we introduce this. And I will have some wonderful parents and wonderful educators sitting in the workshop, and, you know, they see that this program works because they see the things that we tell them, but they sit there kind of skeptically. And many times the teachers will say, I don't think our guys want to come to school. I hear you. I know you say this happens across the country, but I really don't see our guys coming to school. So there's that. Sometimes there's that skepticism, or will the guys have an enjoyable day? When the guys actually demonstrate that they will come in, and the teachers see their eagerness to just help and to serve, and really the men that answer the call, that answer that invitation to take a full day off work, and that's a big sacrifice. Let me say that for any adult, man or woman, all of us are busy, and to burn a day of vacation or to come in and not get paid, it's a huge sacrifice. So when the guys that do this, they come in open-eyed, open-hearted, you know, they'll just say, what can I do? The teachers really become close to these guys, maybe not individually, but as a group. Our watchdogs, I hear this a lot from teachers, our watchdogs do this, our watchdogs do that. And again, it's our dads of our great students, and the teachers really are glad that they can showcase the work they do. They're glad for the opportunity in many cases to demonstrate the challenges that they have, because it really is a partnership between the parents and the educators to have these children hit the mark they need to hit at the end of every school year and be prepared to go on. And so next to the kids, the teachers really grow to appreciate and love these watchdogs more than anyone.
Mm. So it's a win-win situation. It's a win for kids. It's a win for dads. It's a win for educators. It's a win for schools and communities, really. How do you go about starting a watchdogs program in your school? If you're a dad or if you're an educator, how do you get a watchdogs program started?
Right. Well, we were very, very fortunate, as I said earlier, when we started the program way back in 1998, that our principal and our superintendent really embraced it, and pretty quickly the other schools in the area did. And over the first 3 or 4 years of this program being in existence, there were a number of schools that came alongside and really helped us formalize the program. And what we ended up with in about 2006 was a startup kit that we could actually pass this program off to a school in its entirety in a very school-friendly format. And by that I mean there's an implementation guide, There are what we call a form CD that if we say write this letter, it's on that form CD in a Word document already written for you. If we say do a press release, it's already written for you. If we say orientation, daily schedule, all that is done. What we do is we now require somebody from the school to participate in a training session. It takes 45 minutes. If someone wanted to find out about this, they could go to fathers.com/watchdogs. And in the middle of the page, they'll see a little button icon there that has a dad sitting at a computer with his child with a very happy face on his knee. And it says training call sign up. They would click on that. We do that 5 times a week, every week. They can participate in that training call. And we hope it'll be the principal, school counselor, you know, certainly, you know, the parent liaison that wants to bring this on, the PTA president. Listen to that training call and then, you know, get together with the folks that we sort of line out for you during the training call on who should be involved in that. Should be the principal, should be the teachers, you know, a handful of parents, moms or dads to bring it on for that matter. And then once you're ready to do that, we do require a school to buy a startup kit. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, but like a lot of nonprofits, there's a small cost associated with the program. I will tell you this, the startup kit cost a whopping $365 for the school to bring over this thing on. It's a one-time fee. We're not asking them for dues. It just gives them everything that every other school has had in order for them to be successful. And it walks them through the launch events, which there's two, one in the fall, one in the spring. They invite these dads in, walks them through how to schedule them in, what their day will be like. And that really answers all those questions that we've learned from schools. And we can get a school from no watchdog program to a fully functional watchdog program in 3 weeks. And we do that regularly. I mean, we launched almost 700 schools last school year, and we're on track to be pretty close to that this school year. So it works very well.
Wow. It sounds like you put together everything that a school would need to really kind of do this turnkey. You know, here's the kit and here's how you get started here's how you can make it work, adapt it to whatever your needs are at your school.
We do. And I will say this too. We have a very dedicated, small staff, but a dedicated staff at the Watchdog National Office. And, you know, the thing that we mainly do with that staff, or we're there to answer questions for the schools that are thinking about bringing it on, or the schools that have already brought the program on and may have, you know, something they want us to help them with. And, you know, I would just encourage anyone to call us at 888-540-DOGS. That's 888-540-3647. And what you're not going to get is somebody trying to sell you something. What you will get are some very dedicated people that believe in this program. They'll answer your questions until you don't have any more questions and do everything we can to help you be successful if you want to bring this program to your school.
That is outstanding. We'll provide a link to the website as well today with the archive of the program, so folks can find that when they find the program on our website later on today as well. So we want to make sure that they have those resources available to them. Now that you've been with Watchdogs been a part of this since 1998, do you still get to go out and spend a day at school here and there?
Well, I tell you what, you know, because I do so many educational conferences, and since my kids are grown, what I do every fall is I go and visit and participate in at least 6 launch events at different schools. And because our watchdog office is in Springdale, Arkansas, and in the, like I said, we're in 46 states, but in the 4 state areas, you can imagine, mm-hmm. we have hundreds and hundreds of watchdog schools in Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas. So it's easy for me to wrangle an invitation to come in and speak to the dads. But what it gives me the opportunity to do or to see a launch event. You know, last fall I was in Branson, Missouri. They did a district-wide kickoff. They had 600 dads and kids come into this event. Now, that's not typical, but typically you're going to get, you know, 100, 150 dads and kids that come into a launch event. So I haven't actually had the opportunity to serve as a watchdog in a while, where I go in and sit in the little desk and eat the school lunch, but I've seen it work firsthand because I feel like I need to do that to keep my street credibility whenever I go to these conferences to say, I've seen it work firsthand. It's still going very well.
Well, I'd love to hear from our listeners. You can email or tweet today. You can email me at family@kfuo.org, or you can tweet KFUO Andy. Send us a tweet and let us know if you have a watchdog program in your school and how you've been involved in it, or if you know someone who's involved in a watchdog program at schools in your community. Family@kfuo.org or KFUO Andy is my Twitter handle. You can send me a message there as well. Would love to hear about it and hear how Watchdogs is an important part of your community. Eric, as I was thinking through this process, one of the questions that some folks might have about starting up this program, how do you make sure that everybody who's signing up to come spend a day at school is somebody who should be at a school? You know, is background checks or something like that?
Right. And so, yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, that's a concern we have to have. And what we found out a number of years ago, working with schools, and this holds true today, we have yet to work with a school that the district didn't already have a very fully developed volunteer policy. And sometimes those volunteer policies require background checks. Now more than ever, I think when we started this, that was pretty rare. You know, back in 1998 for a school to require background checks. Now I believe the majority do. But the point is this: whether or not your school requires background checks, we always want the men working in the presence of an educator. And again, the schools have demonstrated that they have, you know, very clear-cut policies, and they're able to handle their volunteers very well. Even if you have a school that has 60, 70, 80 men volunteering as a watchdog, it still is going to come down to one guy a day. That's very easy to manage. And we just encourage the schools to implement and utilize your current volunteer policy. Follow that to the letter, and it's going to work fine. You know, we just want to make sure that the guys are always working in the presence of an educator, and that, you know, a couple of reasons, not because the guys are dangerous, but because we don't want there to be any misunderstandings.
Sure.
And we're constantly, reminding the men, through the materials that we give to the schools during the orientation and that type of thing, is that if you look around and, you know, you're with some kids and there's not an educator, there, go find one. Protect yourself, keep yourself covered. They're trying to do right by you, but they may have a comfort level with you and they've walked off, but go find a teacher. And we just haven't had those kind of, issues. The guys that show up again to do this have always seemed like it's been exactly the kind of men that the schools want to have in there, because, you know, there's a white hot spotlight on these men when they come in. I mean, they are the heroes of the hallway. They're not going to blend in. They're going to wear a big watchdog shirt. They're going to stand out like the proverbial sore thumb. And, you know, that's not appealing to every guy. But the guys that it is appealing to that are willing to do that, they're going to be fine. And again, just do the background checks if that's part of the school's policy. And if it's not, do what you normally do, but just keep them with the educators.
I like that. Heroes of the hallway. It's a nice tag, nice tagline there. Well,
yeah.
I want to make sure that folks have the website and contact information to get in touch if they would like to find out more about Watchdogs. Can you give us that website and phone number one more time?
You bet. Fathers.com. And you can go fathers.com/watchdogs, but fathers.com will get you there. And I will say this about fathers.com. Watchdogs is a program of the National Center for Fathering. We'll be having our 25-year anniversary this year at the National Center for Fathering. So while you're at fathers.com, look around at some of the other things, resources, and other programming that's offered by the National Center for Fathering. But go to fathers.com/watchdogs and or call our office at 888-540-3647, 888-540-DOGS.
Very good. Eric Snow, Executive Director for Watchdogs. That's Dads of Great Students. Thanks so much for being our guest today, sharing with us about this outstanding program and for all the great work that you're doing getting dads in schools.
My pleasure, Andy. Thank you so much for giving us this platform to spread the great news. We do appreciate you for this.
You bet. Thanks so much. Coming up in just a little bit, listeners, we've got more great programming. You can stick around, hopefully, for Thy Strong Word. Going to study God's Word with Pastor William Whedon right here on Worldwide KFUO. I want to remind you that you can listen to programs. If you didn't catch the whole program today, you want to hear more of the program, you can listen to the programs online in our on-demand section. Go to KFUO.org and look for on-demand programs, and you'll find Faith and Family and other programs there as well. And you can click on that, and that'll give you, take you to the, lead you to the page where you can listen to the program online. You can download it to listen to it later. You can also find a lot of these programs on iTunes as well. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program as much as I did. We've got more great programming coming up in just a little bit. Thy Strong Word up next with Pastor Whedon on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.